HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to Mint. I am Nasreen Sultana. You are listening to All Things Markets, where I speak to experts analyzing the big trends moving the stock markets. In what is being perceived as a tapering signal, the RBI suspended the bond purchase program, that is GSEC acquisition program or GSAP, after Rs 2.37 trillion purchases in the first half of FY22. The Monetary Policy Committee or MPC kept its policy rates and accommodative stance unchanged but did not announce any new set of liquidity enhancing measures for the first time since the onset of COVID-19 pandemic. With surplus liquidity of above $120 billion sloshing around in the system, the RBI also announced a roadmap to expand and extend the VRRR operations. So, how will these measures by RBI impact bond markets and equities? To understand that, I'm in conversation with Arvind Chari, CIO, Quantum Advisors. Hi Arvind, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back. Great to be speaking to you again.
So Arvind, we've just got over with the monetary policy review. What are your thoughts on the speech that the governor made and the takeaways?
So, very broadly, if I can summarize, the RBI has kind of taken what we call as baby steps towards monetary policy normalization. And when I say what is monetary policy normalization, it is to try and get back banking system liquidity to reasonable levels and interest rates, which are at multi-decade lows, back to, again, reasonable levels. So, this is the statement that the governor gave is kind of indicative that over the next 3 to 6 months, the RBI will take steps to reduce the amount of liquidity. And when I talk about liquidity today, the banking system has about 10 to 11 lakh crores of excess liquidity, which is excess money printed by the RBI available in the banking system. On a normal average, the system is used to minus 2 lakh crore to plus 2 lakh crore. So by this, you can understand that how significantly excess the liquidity is. Now, it was relevant, it was needed last year and during the second wave and after that. But maybe the time has come for the RBI to reduce the amount of liquidity. And why do we need to do that? Because when you have excess liquidity, you tend to have excesses built into the system. Like today, IPO financing, for instance, good thing in terms of getting money into the IPOs, but getting funded at very low rates because the system is heavy liquidity, short-term interest rates are very, very low. And NBFC taking, riskier NBFCs are also able to borrow at very, very low rates as compared to what they were borrowing, say, 2-3 years back. So that's the reason why they need to kind of reduce the liquidity. And I think they have started to take steps towards that. And we will see the overall liquidity from the 10, 11 lakh crore slowly and steadily coming down. Right now, what they've done is they've increased what they call variable rate reverse repo tenor from 14 days. And they said we will do 28 days. I think they will increase the tenor. They will need to do 1 month, 3 month tenors to suck out liquidity for durable. So that's on the on the liquidity aspect. On the interest rates, they haven't done anything, right? They've kept the reverse repo at 3.35. They've kept the repo rate at 4%. And they've also said that they will remain accommodative, which is monetary policy will remain supportive for reviving growth for as long as possible. Right? We would expect even that would change, not very immediately, but over a period of time. First, the first step that they'll have to take is today the reverse repo is at 3.35, repo is at 4%. Right? With this liquidity sucking out, overnight rates, which are at 3.15, 3.20, will come between reverse repo and repo rate. So overnight rates will move in between the band of the reverse repo, repo rate. And as they keep sucking out more liquidity, they will allow the reverse repo rates to move up. So that will be the second aspect of what we call as monetary policy normalization. maybe sometime early next year, they will start thinking about whether the repo rate itself, which is at 4%, whether that itself needs to go up. And I wrote an analogy for this in my pre-policy note, where I compared the RBI's actions to a medical analogy. So I said that think of COVID as a brain stroke and the lockdowns as the paralysis, right? So the RBI's rate cuts and liquidity infusions were like the emergency response treatment that was given. And then the government came out with Atmanirbhar package, the RBI gave moratorium, restructuring. Mm. These are all like secondary medications, right? Just to ensure that there is no infection. And right now we are seeing that the economy has kind of rebounded. A lot of the activity levels are back to pre-COVID, or some of them are above pre-COVID levels, right? The activity movement in terms of movement of goods, movement of people, travel, airlines, railways, all of that also have come out. If you look at Google Mobility, people are driving to workplaces. You know, that is also increasing. So I kind of compared that keeping the liquidity and interest rates at crisis levels was same as compared to keeping a patient who is now moving about and independent on a ventilator with a very high flow oxygen support. You know, that kind of doesn't gel well or match well, right? So this is what their effort is now. So by sucking out liquidity and by talking about interest rate hike sometime next year, they are taking the emergency oxygen ventilator out of the economy and allowing the economy to function on its own. This is broadly my take on, you know, what we heard from the governor.
Another big announcement was about discontinuing the GSAP program. Yes. This, of course, we saw the immediate reaction in the bond markets. The yields had increased. Now, what do you think, how will this pan out both for the bond market and for the equities?
The impact is far more clear and evident for the bond markets, especially when the discontinuation of the GSAP program, as I said, has a far higher impact on the bond market, because the GSAP was a way to part fund the government's fiscal deficit, right? So it was a big support for the demand and supply in the market. Supply is coming from the government in terms of increasing fiscal deficit and borrowing, and demand is coming a large source from the RBI. So the discontinuation of that is an indication to the markets that the RBI will no longer be strategic on, you know, committing to buy government bonds to support bond yields. They will become more tactical. So when they see a very sharp spike in bond yields and they deem it as unreasonable, they'll come and do what they're doing called the operation twist, right? They'll sell the shorter end and buy the longer end to kind of control the bond yields. But apart from that, they are indicating to the markets that this is one way you now start dealing with the bond supply and the bond markets on your own. This should see bond yield, long bond yields especially, going up. And there are 2-3 other points to it. The main point is oil prices, right? It's that oil prices are India's major bugbear, right? Short-term macro risk always is oil prices, because it has an impact on the trade deficit, it has an impact on inflation and on your fiscal deficit, especially now with the huge excise. Any increase in oil prices and the government doesn't cut excise, you know, gets passed on to higher retail prices, which leads to inflation. So bonds have a very genuine worry there. Apart from the discontinuation of GSAP, if oil prices go up and sustain at $90-$95 for a period of time, that will be that will be problematic for the economy. That will also be problematic for the equity markets, because since you asked me about equity markets, some amount of inflation is always good for equity markets, because, you know, working capital cycles get better, inventory valuations increase, stocking of raw materials, all those prices get fed onto companies which are very good operating leverage, you know, their profitability, their EBITDA levels, margins increase. But if the inflation is high and it goes above a threshold level, and then it starts impacting, you know, input prices, then, you know, profit margins. So oil has to be very, very closely watched. And I think that will be a bigger risk for both the Indian bond and the equity markets than the short-term impact of, say, RBI not buying enough government bonds. So, you know, we need to watch that very closely.
Right. See, RBI's projection for CPI, it's at 5.3 for FY22. And the GDP target is also not changed. It is at 9.5. But of course, the governor also mentioned that there are risks from the global commodity prices, which have been rising. Now, how does it augur for the equity markets? I understand corporate earnings depend a lot on the commodity prices because there are a bunch of companies who which depend on raw materials like your metals, crude oil for their products. And we are aware of the supply chain constraint that's there in the auto side of the sector. And Governor also mentioned about the supply side constraint. Now, considering all of this, do you think the CPI inflation and the GDP target would be met? And how does it actually pan out for the equity markets?
So on inflation, I think the supply side worries are genuine. I mean, if I look at even on the global scenario, the demand for goods is far exceeding the supply response that can happen in a short period of time, and that is causing all kinds of global supply chain issues, pricing of global supply chain. It will also lead to what I think will happen in the in many companies and many corporate sectors is people will stock up on inventory because they if they are not certain about the supply that they're going to come through, they will increase their inventory stocking and they'll build up inventories. So this is will continue to remain a problem in global supply chain. Commodity prices, if the demand sustains, and you know, that is the main thing going into 2022, does the global demand given, which was supported by global fiscal action, does it remain as robust as, you know, as the market, as the commodity markets are pricing it? If they are, then of course the supply side and the input price pressures will remain for equity markets. From the positive side, I mean, if you look at the Indian equities, the global demand, as I spoke about, is starting to have its impact on Indian exports. And although the near-term momentum might have slowed down, but despite all these non-availability of ships and containers and supply chain issues, Indian exports have actually done phenomenally well over the last like 12 months or 12 to 18 months. And that's that is coming out of the global recovery and the global demand. You know, so that is a good aspect that will get fed on to broader corporate and also small and medium enterprises. And also, we might just see the first signs of CapEx recovery coming out of domestic demand as well as exports. And this is exactly what happened in the post-SARS 2003-2004 scenario where global demand increase and global and India's exports was the first driver of capex, and then came the infrastructure, and then came the normal larger private corporate capex. So those things are fairly attractive. We just have to hope that this inflation and this price rise doesn't increase to such an extent that global central banks have to react, have to tighten. And that kind of derails the entire growth recovery. That remains a risk going into 2022. The other risk for equity markets is also, as you said, interest rates have been a major determinant of equity valuations, right? For a while now. And if this inflation is misread by the markets, and they estimate that the Fed will act faster, they'll be more hawkish. That can have a short-term impact on global equity markets, given where the valuations of many companies and many indices are. Flows to India has been extremely attractive, right? If you look at foreign flows in equities, and if I look at over a three-year period also, we've seen about $50 billion of foreign portfolio inflows into equities. That's been very significant, and that kind of whatever under allocation that foreigners had between, say, 2015 to 2018, and it got corrected in the last 3 years. And that has also driven valuations plus the domestic mutual fund flows. We think domestic mutual fund flows can remain relatively robust. FPIs might slow down just on the valuation purpose, but if the global equity markets have a big crack and valuations in India get better, just this entire aspect of China versus India over the last 1.5 years, that has become a very big thing where many foreign investors will kind of relook or reassess their overall allocation to China. And India happens to be the big market, absorptive capacity, rule of law, reasonably liquid markets to absorb large capital. Foreigners are generally under allocated in equities, especially so in bonds. And we should see that trend play out over the next 1 or 2 to 3 years, you know. So some negatives near term, which is inflation and pricing and a shock from the Fed in terms of interest rate going up, but a lot of larger benefits were export recovery, you know, CapEx revival, and this overall allocation to India by foreign investors on a sustained secular basis.
Right. But since you talked about the FIIs also, what do you think about the global rating agency's stance on India? Last week, we saw Moody's upgrade its outlook on India. But of course, it has not changed the rating. We are still at the lowest investment grade by Moody's. Yeah. Do you think that after, by when can we expect a change in the rating for India by the global rating agencies?
So I'll just give a correction. So Moody's changed their outlook. They had a negative outlook on India.
Yes.
And they got it back to stable. So for at Quantum, for a long time, we've always held that that India's rating, foreign currency rating by Moody's and S&P and Fitch, is subject to growth than debt. Like normally when you talk about credit rating and you talk about debt levels, and India has a very high debt level and fiscal deficit, and that sort of limits India's growth. We always believe that it's actually growth that matters, right? So if India can sustain real GDP growth of 6.5-7%, which means that the nominal GDP, if you add 5%, 5.5% inflation, will be at about 11.5-12.5. So when the economy grows at 12-12.5%, companies and corporates and, you know, debt levels get lower, and that is the main peg for the ratings. So they downgraded in they changed the stable outlook to negative in 2019, precisely on that regard, because at that time, if you remember, India GDP already slowed down, right? Demonetization, GST, ILFS, banking system problem, the NPAs in the banks had led to a growth, GDP growth trajectory, which was already below 4% when we went into COVID. This change in outlook back to stable is kind of an indication by Moody's that maybe India's GDP growth is likely to come back to that 6-6.5% real GDP level, you know, which is what it was for a 40-year average. If you take India's real GDP growth is 6.2%. If you take a 20-year average, is it between 6.5-7%. So the confidence that the Indian GDP growth can sustain and come back to that 6-6.5% is I think what might have pushed them to change their outlook from negative to stable. Now, what will it take for India to upgrade and go above, you know, become a better investment grade? That sustainability of that real GDP growth, like, can India sustain at 7 and above for a long period of time without having inflation, without having a macro stability concern that we had in 2012-13, without having the current account deficit problem? You know, if you're able to do that over a, say, 5-7 year period, and, you know, all that requires a lot of reforms, right? I mean, governments in India since the 1980s have done reforms at their own pace, but reforms which will ensure that, you know, power availability, roads, you know, second generation reforms in terms of better rule of law, you know, more certainty in your policy guideline. Many things contribute to that. So I think that is some way away, because that has to happen sustainably for a long period of time, and should lead to reduction in the debt, overall debt to GDP or fiscal deficit, right? So if that growth comes about, so say India can grow at, say, 12-13% nominal GDP, if that happens, right, then the rating agency will get comfortable and say that, okay, now the debt to GDP trajectory is actually gone down quite a bit, and India can be upgraded. Because of COVID, our debt to GDP actually went up. So, you know, first to claw back from that 80-85-90% debt to GDP, to come back to our earlier level of between 60-70%, that itself will take a few years of very sustained growth. So it's a good sign that they've done it, because that means that Indian growth trajectory is back at that 6-7% real GDP level, but needs to go a lot higher and sustainably to get an upgrade. So upgrade is a it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Thanks a lot for those insights. And we hope the economy gets in a better shape next time I catch up with you in a podcast. Thanks a lot once again for sharing your time with us, and we wish you good health.
Thank you, Nasim. Thank you so much.
For feedback, you can write to me at nasreen.s@lifemint.com, or you can reach out to me on Twitter at Nasreen Story. You can also reach out to us at HT Smartcast. We are present on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And to listen to more podcasts like this, you need to log on to www.htsmartcast.com.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.